You're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Well, hey, and thanks for joining us today on our Boggy Talk episode. And hey, guys, how are y'all?
Doing all right. I feel like I'm just paddling.
In the boggy bayou?
In the boggy bayou. Yeah. It feels like the boggy bayou outside. It's so moist and humid.
Yeah. Actually, there was a little fall.
Mm-hmm. There was like a little bit of a breeze.
I started drinking pumpkin spice right away.
Bro, already there. Gosh.
Do you know this about me, that I'm a basic white girl
I think pumpkin spice is the most overrated.
Where are you on this issue, Kelly?
I like pumpkin spice, but it's a little too like sugary, a little too syrupy. Yeah. So, okay.
Well, I'm not doing like the pumpkin spice latte from Starbucks.
Oh, okay.
A, overpriced, and B,
it is.
No offense to you, Starbucks. I'm there Bible study. it's too sugary. But I'll do like a pump of it, or Christy buys like creamer, and I just put
coffee creamer in it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm
my
just
kids.
Black coffee guy.
They walked outside and they were like, "It's freezing!"
I'm oh
like,
wow!
No, it's wow. not. It's
that's
just
like when we go to like. I mean, it's so funny, like how just acclimated we are to the heat. You know, when we go to India, or go to Uganda, and they're like, "It's cold." I'm like, "It's 80 degrees. This is cold for you."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, so, they don't do AC.
That's true. The so there, yes, why. Exactly. So it is chilly. So.
Which, according to your son, you don't really do AC either.
This is true. Yeah, well, Well, I'm like, if y'all close the door, we could turn it down past 78. But y'all don't close the door, so I'm not cooling the whole world, guys. That's what we say.
Yeah, the neighborhood.
Yeah. Like, but yeah, it is. We keep it warm because, well, we got a lot of people, and it's expensive. So there it is.
I noticed we've talked about the weather. The beginning, the last three episodes.
That means we're old.
That's what I was thinking.
So next week, we're not going to talk about the weather.
No, okay. We're not. You have just called us out.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Okay. So moving right along, just checking in with some things going on in church, calendar items that we've got. We've had a lot of opportunities to serve.
Yes. New opportunities with kids ministry. Thankfully,
thank you,
people are
Jesus.
Responding, and we need more still. I mean, we're continuing to work on that, and that's a huge need. Connect team, we have interest meetings, so that's a huge need. I think sometimes people overlook that, but it's an incredible ministry to help people once they come on campus to feel welcomed, because our goal is that they would believe that Jesus belongs to his family and become, and then belong is a huge piece of that, just that feeling of welcome. Foster crew, we were talking about that, just supporting foster adoptive families here in our church and the community. And then
tutoring.
Edge tutoring, Good News Club, and we just put a save the date out for Serve Day.
That's why
I'm wearing this shirt today.
That's why.
Serve Day, October 5th. Also,
that was intentional?
It was intentional, and also it was clean.
So, oh, okay.
Wow.
Okay.
It was clean.
Planets aligned.
Yeah, lots of things coming up, and we're thankful.
And this Sunday, you're preaching.
Woo! I'm working on it. I'm working on it still.
Yeah.
Yeah,
excited about that.
Yeah, it's about Jesus. So,
it is about Jesus.
Those like three verses like kind of just preach themselves if you like really dive into them. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I'll do it justice.
You will. You will.
So, it'll be great.
It's about Jesus.
Well, speaking of sermons, this last Sunday, James, there was a point that I wanted to bring up. We could talk about it today. So the quote is, "We don't work, learn, or talk our way out of the authority of evil. We have to be rescued." So can we unpack that a little bit? How do people try to do those things? How do they work, learn, or talk their way out of the authority of evil?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with kind of clarifying what I meant, which I think was clear on Sunday, but just in case it wasn't, maybe re-clarifying.
I don't know, my inbox sit. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, and then maybe we can just kind of chime in from there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds simple and sounds easy to grasp, and as Christians, like, we're like, yeah, Jesus, right? Like, he's the answer. But functionally, I think a lot of people, like, do think, like, the way my life has changed, the way I'm not in the hands of Satan, the way that I, you know, whatever, you know, go to heaven even maybe, is by one of those things, you know, basically having a lot of talk, you know, about being right. And maybe that's us talking about it and convincing ourselves. Like, people justify themselves to me a lot as a pastor, and I'm like, respectfully, you know, it doesn't matter what I think about you in terms of salvation, you know. And people justify themselves. You know, you see that in all kinds of things. And then, like, some people think by acquiring knowledge of the Bible, and usually that ends up going in one extreme way, that then we're good. And then other people, I mean, think, hey, if I do enough to justify my sin, then I'll be good. And the truth is, what the Bible teaches us is that apart from the perfect rescuing us, we're damned. You know, we the authority of evil still has authority over us. There's only one who has authority to rescue us from evil, and that's Jesus. So that's what I mean by that.
That's good. So I mean, I
people
think,
do that.
Yeah, I mean, everybody tries that, I think. You know, right. We're all trying to, you know, in our sin, we think we can rescue ourselves, and then we come to the point where we realize we can't rescue ourselves. We were talking about this in our life group 2 weeks ago, so we're going through 1 Peter, and in chapter 1, it says, you know, be holy as God is holy, and then he goes on to talk about conduct. And so we were talking about what it means to be holy, and some translations would say be perfect as God is perfect, and really that, I think, I understand that translation, but really what holy means is set apart. And what we talked about what that really means and how, like, we view it as in terms of being set apart from the world. Like the world is sinful, so I'm going to not be sinful. Mm-hmm. But really, like, the only way to be holy is Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, his holiness in us, and that we're not just set apart from the world, but we're set apart for God.
Right.
And so there's different aspects of that. And I think what we find ourselves doing is we're constantly looking for validation in our righteousness at other people. And we are looking at the standard. And I heard this in a sermon recently, not from you. It was just a podcast sermon. Sorry.
You're but, not supposed to listen to
you would agree. But he was talking about how, like, let's take the intellectual group who views their righteousness on their knowledge and how much they know about the Bible or
this is what I was talking about on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, but like how high their view is of themselves because of what they know, and they'll look down on those, and not even just, but their form of worship or their intellectual ability, and they'll look down on those who are less, that who don't know as much. But then you have the group that doesn't know as much, who will be like, well, praise, I'm not like that. They're so prideful. Mm-hmm. But then you're actually being prideful about the fact that you're not prideful. Mm-hmm. And it's this trap. And you just fall deeper and deeper and deeper into the pit. It's like being caught in quicksand. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this view of trying to rescue yourself from evil is like being caught in quicksand. And you can't get your way out. Mm-hmm. The only way to get out of it is for someone to throw you the rope. You have to receive the rope, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we're just constantly trying to work ourselves out and be perfect, and we can't be perfect. Mm-hmm. We can be holy, but only because of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I was thinking with the learning aspect of it too, that you kind of have two different groups. Even with that, I feel like you have in the Old Testament and the New Testament, we could see, like, with the Pharisees, that they thought they knew everything, and I mean, they knew the law and everything about it, but it still didn't rescue them from the authority of evil. But then even, I think, in today's society, kind of that intellectual crowd that thinks, like, well, there is no absolute truth, you know, and we've got all these different things, and essentially they're placing themselves as God
by saying there's no absolute truth
in that. And so you can see on both sides, like, even Christians do that with just the knowledge. I've got so much knowledge, and but then you have the intellectuals that are against knowledge of God, but they're still placing themselves as the authority of their life.
Yeah, I don't think we realize how much what you're talking about affects us, and I think even the church, like, because it's almost like now, if we can't intellectually understand, or maybe even if psychology doesn't explain the biblical point, we're going to, like, go with the non-biblical point, you know? Like, and sometimes, like, we just have to trust the Lord and his word. And I don't mean trust a man's interpretation. I mean trust the Lord in his word. And so, you know, I do think there's biblical grounds for divorce. I think there's biblical grounds for separation, leaving church, all those things. So I'm not saying, like, always just do this, but, like, I've noticed a lot more people are rationalizing divorce, a lot more people are, you know, rationalizing just quitting things, and it's because they're not leading into trusting the word of God. And so I think if we take that a step further, you know, I think that people essentially, you know, are just thinking my arrival at knowledge, the Gnostics, you know, is that's what makes me righteous. And it's so funny because, like, the super theological crowd, so maybe the Jews, will say, well, that intellectual crowd that's New Age-ish, they're the Gnostics. But then that crowd will say, well, those people who are, you know, pride themselves on their spiritual theological knowledge, they're the Gnostics. And there's some there could be truth in both of that, you know, I think.
And we do that, like, in current church culture. We're like, we're this church and that church this. And I think all of that, you know, roots comes back to pride, and pride's evil. You know, like, so much of it is that self-righteousness. We are basing our righteousness off of how we compare to other people and that standard. But then we're also basing ourselves, we use a sliding scale for ourselves. We don't use that sliding scale for other people, but we use a sliding scale for us. Yeah, like, well, like you were talking about rationalizing sin, like those big things. But I think we see more and more people even rationalizing, like, I don't want to call them lesser sins because they're not, but things like, you know, like we say marriage.
I was gonna have to correct
your
bad theology.
I'm not saying lesser sins, but things that, like, they're just, oh, people just do that. Like, you're just angry. Like, and you're just lustful. You're just, like, and we're not like, no, like, those things, like, separate us from God, and we have to address those too. Mm-hmm. And, like, we just start accepting these things as normal rather than saying, like, no, like, I can't, like, we're not looking for the rescuer. Mm-hmm. We're just looking for ways that we can cope. And one of the ways people are coping in their pursuit of self-righteousness is by lowering the standard for themselves.
Yeah. We're kind of getting into talk, and so I'm going to pause at learn first. Like, yeah, I think that we need to realize believing things about Jesus and about God does not save us. Believing Jesus saves us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to this, you were referencing the verse, be holy as I am holy. Like, there's one that's commanded to be holy, and there's one that just is holy, according to that verse. And so, like, we start with the one who just is holy, and then we say, okay, I need to look to him to understand how I'm holy. Yeah. Well, first understand, he sets me free from the authority of evil. So that's the only way I can even walk into this holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think when it comes to learning, we just have to be, careful that we're not preaching. Okay, so if you're more reformed or you're more into end times or you're more whatever, and you think your group is right, I'm not even arguing with you about being wrong, that you're wrong or right at this point. But when we begin to think, and we're saved because we've figured it out, like, And it does happen. Notice it's like, thank God we're not like those other churches.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah,
we don't understand what we understand.
Yeah,
it's like, woo.
Yeah, that's dangerous territory.
Woo. Yeah. Well, so
that's the Holy Spirit. He's going. Woo. That's how I hear him, at least.
That's the mighty rushing wind.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
Well, we have how they've worked their way out of evil.
He sounds like a guy who's drank too much Coors Light in Destin. Woo-hoo!
I mean, you hear that when you pass over the bridge at Crab Island. Woo!
They did say, are these people drunk? So maybe.
That's true.
That's true. Good point.
Acts chapter 2. I was just reading that with my discipleship guys. So anyway. All right. Sorry, Kel.
No, it's all right. So the last point we have is how people talk their way out of evil. And we kind of talked about that a little bit, but do you have anything more specific with that?
Well, I was thinking what Justin was saying, like, I just listened to the book Shepherds for Sale by Megan Bashan. She's bashing a lot of people in the,
she is bashing a lot of people.
Yeah, and I'll just, here's my quick review of that book. You know, I think she jumped into a narrative and just saw everything through that narrative, probably to sell the book, but there was some valuable things in it. And one of the things she's really talking about, and I appreciate her personalization of this, is like, she struggled with abuse and, I don't know if she said, you know, sexual promiscuity, but she just struggled with a rough life. And as she was going to therapy, it was all about how she was a victim. And she was like, I ultimately had to come to a place where I realized, like, yes, people did things wrong to me, but I'm a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I put myself in some of those situations, and I chose wrong too. And I do think that we have come to a place more and more where people are just saying, well, I'm a victim of my circumstances, whether it be the racial tension and issues in our culture, whether it be childhood, whether it be whatever it might be. And I'm not discounting legitimate trauma and legitimate social issues that we need to resolve. But like, if there's never a place in that where we say, and I'm a sinner, like I'm in need of a savior. Like we have lost the gospel.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that's becoming more and more like where the church is drifting in America, you know. And I don't just mean like liberal churches, you know. I just mean just like the gospel is being lost. And I think we're talking ourselves into righteousness. And the truth is there's not one righteous. No, not one. Not one who seeks after God. And so we all have to come to that place where we realize, like, I'm a sinner. So, yeah, there's drama. There's trauma from my childhood. There's issues I've had of church hurt and all that. But woe is me. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Isaiah. He says that. He says, woe is me. I am ruined. I am a man of unclean lips. And I dwell amongst the people of unclean lips. Like, he's not like, it's their fault. He's like, I'm in it, you know. And so I guess I would say talking our way out of heaven is just neglecting that.
Yeah, there's definitely cultural threads in that, the everyone being a victim. And I think a lot of what it is like what you said, like there's legitimate things that happen to people.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people are borrowing someone else's victimization
to
oh, that happened to me. And it's like, actually, it wasn't the same situation. But it's easier to just it goes back to trying to rationalize things rather than like, no, I have to own my piece of this, in this situation, you know, whatever that is. And I think just borrowing that, it's just like, if everything is trauma, then nothing is, you know, and it takes away from what actually is. If everything is the scenario of abuse, if everything is abuse, then you're actually like mitigating what actually is abuse and needs to be dealt with. And we play the victim to everything, even just not getting our way. We're like, well, I'm the victim in this situation. Well, actually, like, if you're in a position where you have standards at work and you don't meet those standards, and then you are like in a performance review or however it's called out, you're like, hey, you didn't meet these standards. And if you have 17 reasons why you didn't do it, and none of those are you, then you're playing and it's that same mentality we bring into righteousness. It's like, we are not owning our own piece of this.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I see the need for recovery programs because people have addictions that are debilitating to them being functioning, I guess I would just say. But what can happen in an ability program is we can rehabilitation program, a recovery program, we can quickly become legalist. And so it's like, these 12 steps are what saves me. Well, no, Jesus saves you. And so, like, I think, like, we're not, everybody needs to hear that. And I just think pragmatism is causing us to lose the gospel, you know. And so I just think we can't, that's why we have to be gospel centered. Like, we have to always be there. And it's messy. Messier than just saying, well, they're a victim and we need to care for them. And, you know, like, they're a victim and we have to help them see their sin.
Right.
I'm talking about my friend. Yeah. I'm talking, you know,
absolutely.
Like, that's messy. Yeah. Like, it's so much easier to either be like, well, they're a sinner and that's why they have problems. Yeah. I don't know why I said it in a JFK voice, you know, or
that's how people who
or they're
that
a victim.
Yeah.
No, they are a sinner and a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and I like that you brought up those two sides of it, because we live in a fallen world and we are going to have brokenness all around us. Brokenness is going to be part of our story, but that doesn't negate our need for Jesus in our life. And so we can't say, because then, I mean, it kind of goes back to the age old question. Well, if God was a good God, why does he allow these things to happen to people? And so these are, you know, like you said, it's messy. People have to wrestle with these questions of God's sovereignty over their life in the midst of terrible things happening to them. But then what do they do with that, you know, moving forward from
that's
that?
Good.
So,
and that point is where he meets us. You know, I think that 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 moment when we realize it is beyond our comprehension is where he meets us, because that's when we're surrendered to him. Yeah. We're like, God, I don't understand, but I trust you. I trust you because I know this is true about you.
Right. That's good. Yeah. Well, kind of lighten up the mood now.
that's heavy.
We have a couple of questions. So if you've been going to some of our services or listening online, we've had a lot of 90s worship music, which has been cool to hear again.
Throwing back.
So why don't we do those? Why did we stop? Churches in general, yes.
Mr. Music Man.
So I would say some churches didn't stop, and they still call it contemporary. They still call it contemporary. Because our philosophy is just to chase the next biggest thing.
Or whatever that is.
Yeah. I think there's multiple reasons. One, people keep writing new songs. Because there are, like, and I think there's merit in that. We shouldn't, as a church, be constantly chasing the next latest greatest thing. At the same time, we shouldn't always be looking back.
You know what the oldest and greatest thing
is. That's right. We shouldn't always be looking back. We need both, because God did work, and we stand on the shoulders of people who've gone before us, who sit on that faithfulness, God is doing things now, and so we have new expressions of that. I mean, honestly, a lot of 90s songs, when people now, still in 2024, tell me, like, I don't like singing those 7-Eleven songs. we sing the same seven words 11 times. It's like, good, me neither. They're referring to a lot of songs that were worship songs that were in the 90s. And really...
Yeah, those open the eyes of my heart.
It is really like...
I Lift Your Name on High must have been like the song.
Yeah, it was. Open the eye. I think when people say that, I'm like, we're in a church. We all sing, I Could Sing of Your Love Forever.
Yeah,
forever.
Forever.
That song, that's the one song, I think. And so there is merit in that. However, there's also
merit in the critique.
I think so. Okay. If it's been misused, I do think there's also merit in singing something over and over again so that it really moves from our head to our hearts. Yeah. And there's merit in all that. You don't want to do every song that way. You also don't want every song to have like 5 million words that people can't remember and carry with them. Really, I think a lot of the songs that were written in the 90s, you know, some of it's musical style. You know, you look at rhythms. I mean, even some of the older hymns, like, they have to be redone to contextualize them for now, because the melody or the rhythm is just, it's not what people catch onto now. When you're thinking about really discipling a new generation in the church and in worship, like, you know, it does need to be carryable. Then, honestly, there's new stuff, and it just kept, I mean, musically, style shift, things change. Some of them aren't great, but, you know, we wouldn't sing those. But I think all those reasons, yeah.
So tell us more about your stealth Bethelism.
Please.
What have you been trying to sneak in?
It's just funny.
Is the angel dust going to fall?
The
angel dust, Kelly?
No.
Put, like, gold... Like, it's like in their air ducts.
Gold
put
to bloom, like
gold,
like at Disney Junior.
Yeah, they would put like gold glitter and confetti, and then at certain parts in the service, they'd hit it and be like, the presence of the Lord is falling.
Wow.
I mean, there's churches that's happening. I'm having Ward install those this week, actually. you know, I think a lot of things about worship. And I think what we never want to be is a church or a people, and I would say this for any church, who's just relying upon the next latest and greatest thing to keep people motivated. We've got to go back to the gospel all the time, the songs we're singing and, you know, and the things we're saying in between songs, et cetera. And so I think we're just trying to strike that, like, in what we do. You know, like, I don't have a formula for we sing this, you know, X number of songs from this decade, you know, and, you know, like we're just trying to worship Jesus. Yeah. And I will say our church is on board with that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like responsive to that.
By and large.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody, but also not everybody's on board with everything, any church. So, and that tension helps us make sure we're staying on point.
Yeah, good point.
And a bunch of those people don't believe in Jesus that wrote some of those songs from the 90s.
That is true.
So
some of those bands did deconstruct. And, you know, I go back to a lot
of that. So did some of those hymn writers.
I mean,
that's what I was going to say. What about the hymns?
A lot of the hymn writers did too. We just don't talk about that. I think I think so much of it in the 90s really was industry driven. It was, it was, they were like, hey, this is working and this is selling. And I remember that happening. I remember hearing a conversation or reading about a conversation, and you guys may not even know this person, but in the late 90s, there was this singer-songwriter who came out. Her name was Jennifer Knapp. She's so good.
I went to one of her concerts.
She's amazing, amazing. A songwriter, just so worshipful. Mm. And I remember reading about a conversation, and it was people in the industry talking about, yeah, we really just hit the market at the right time with her. And it's talking about like they're looking for people to sell their songs. Yeah, like, and they're taking and that is Nashville. That is every industry, like any kind of music industry. You have songwriters, you have record labels, and they're just looking for someone with the right look and the right feel.
Yeah.
And
what happened to her?
I think like that was a piece of that. You're looking for the right person to sell the product. And I think hopefully maybe we've moved past some of that. At least we can in our corporate worship.
Well, our next question, any comments on the transgender boxer who won the gold medal? Lots to unpack right there in that question.
So, I mean, in that I saw that when we sent the questions, and I was like, wait a minute, wasn't she not? Because I didn't really follow the story because I just...
Yeah, she's not transgender,
correct.
Right?
I was like, she's not, right?
Okay, so... So I've read a lot of different things, but I read that she says, and her parents said, she was born a girl, she was raised a girl,
right,
and that she is a girl. I guess the controversy started, it was a different competition. It wasn't from the Olympics, but her and another boxer had some genetic testing done, and it had said that she had the XY chromosome. Am I saying this correctly?
Which is male, right?
Right. And so they were disqualified from that. But then there's been, controversy about the test and the legality of it and if it was correct and all of these things. And some people say that a lot of those tests can be messed up because of different hormones. So ultimately, they're, kind of the two sides of saying, well, no, she is a girl. Mm-hmm. She's not transgender. And then I guess there would be another side that's saying, but she had the XY from the. Right.
So can we talk about this from two angles?
Yes, please.
We'll talk about it first from the just kind of thought angle. And then second, I kind of want to talk it from a pastoral angle. Mm-hmm. So first, Al Mohler makes a great point when he talked about this on the briefing that we're at a point in civilization where we have women's boxing. And so he makes a case.
We're a little bored, like, I think.
I know this isn't popular, but like we shouldn't as a civilization have women's boxing. And so when you start to have women's boxing, then you begin to have women who are more feminine and less feminine boxing each other. And you start to get into all kinds of technical issues about who should fight each other. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's that. So if she indeed, has XY chromosome, then I would agree with the World Boxing Federation that says she shouldn't be boxing women who do not have that. But the IBC, right, or Olympic, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm mixing them both up. WWE, Vince McMahon's in there somewhere. But the Olympics have different standards. And so I would just disagree with their standards. And so I think, it's just a weird, nuanced issue.
Mm-hmm.
The pastoral thing, so when I saw this, I'm like, and I saw even in our church probably, I don't remember any names, but like people just like, this is atrocious and this is what's wrong with civilization. Here's this man boxing this woman, all that stuff. And I was like, okay, this picture I'm seeing affirms that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really going on here? Because it doesn't make sense that the Olympics would have this going on. And upon investigation, what it seems to be the case is she was someone who's one of those very small percentages of people that are born not clear-cut male or female. Mm-hmm. Like there's maybe, because we do have people that are born with both, with features from both. I'm trying to say this away because I know there's kids listening, on here. And people just was like, well, this fits the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just attacking this person. And I think that this is something we need to be aware of. we as believers and as conservatives, two different things that sometimes match together, don't know what to do with people like her.
Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm. And when we jump on it like we did with such villainization of her, whether or not she should be boxing or not, that's a World Boxing Federation or IBC or I don't know who, you know, that's Vince McMahon's deal. But when we act like that, we instantly light a fire to the side that's saying Christians don't love transgender people. Christians don't love people. And they'll use someone like her who she, if this is all true, was born this way, did nothing to do this. God allowed this to happen. And it's heartbreaking for her to have to navigate that. And what she's getting from Christians and what she's getting from conservatives is hate.
Yeah, very true.
And to me, that was the bigger issue, to say, really, we're that ugly? Like, so that's just affirmed. She's going to do her thing, and the liberals accept her, you know, and all that stuff. And the non-Christians accept her, and so she's going to lean into that. And I would say that is a wake-up call to us as Christians, that when there are people who don't fit the mold, how do we show them kindness and grace? Even if we're like, hey, you shouldn't be boxing, here's why.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, how are we responding to that, for sure?
I mean, that comes back to the gospel. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, what would... Yeah, like you said, like it's.
Well, you think about if it was your own child.
Yeah, like
you know,
the gospel.
Like,
I mean, all of us to some, we're all born like we're all sinners, and we all are. And the fall. I mean, the Bible talks about that all creation is affected by the fall, and even including our bodies.
Yeah,
and you know, I think that's like what is her ultimate hope in life and death? It is Jesus.
Yeah,
you know, and I think. When we respond in such a, like you said, the villainization of this person who's, you know, from appearance was playing by the rules, right?
Yeah.
And I think like that's where you're like, okay, we're missing the mark here.
Yeah.
And it's There you go. What a way to.
I realize we can slip, right? But like. We come up with some interesting definitions of like manhood and womanhood too. Like, let's forget even the gender thing. It's like, you know, well, a real man, you know, he hunts and I don't hunt, but I lead my family faithfully before the Lord.
That's right.
And no offense, but I'm not swayed by people. You know what I mean? Like, I feel very confident as a man.
Mm-hmm.
I just think hunting's super boring. Like, now listen, if I had to go and, you know, I mean, I hunt at Publix and Sam's, like, you know, like if it were in a culture where I really had to go kill a buffalo to feed my family, then I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
But I don't have to.
Right.
So, like, I just feel like that comes back to the weird, like, identity thing.
Right.
Like,
mm-hmm.
But then there are people who are more effeminate, who are men. There are people who are more masculine that are women. And we really do, as Christians even, like we don't correct our children for making fun of them. And we don't allow them to be who God created them to be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think this brought, to me, that was the more shocking
thing. The response, for sure. Well, we love all these questions. Thank you.
Short, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have more, you can send them to me, kelly@churchonbayshore.org.
K-E-L-L-Y.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.